So whenever it was dirty, whenever it was rainy, when it was cold and wet, we were right there in the field with the Marines we commanded. So we were just as dirty every day. Well, think about that. Think about the respect you garner from the people you lead when you're in the trenches with them, swinging and fighting and suffering just like they are. They can look over at you and in you see, this guy cares about me. This is a true leader and he's different.
Welcome to the Follow My Lead podcast, where we transfer stories and best practices of today's leaders to the leaders of tomorrow with your host, John Eads.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 5. I'm your host, John Eads. You can follow me on social media at John G. Eads. And today we're joined by a real American hero and a man I look up to a great deal, Mark Hood. Mark spent time in the U.S. Marines fighting in Desert Storm and has then gone on to have an extremely successful professional career as a VP of Sales and now Senior Consultant at Sales Performance International. If that wasn't enough, he tells us his whole life was meant to prepare himself for sitting in first class on Flight 1549 that had an emergency landing in the Hudson River. These events were played out on the big screen in the hit movie Sully, which featured Tom Hanks as Captain Sully Sullenberger. To be honest, I was so interested and engaged in our discussion, I almost forgot to ask him about the experience of landing in the Hudson and the leadership that happened during and after the crash landing. Just tells you how good our discussion really was. But that we didn't just cover Flight 1549. We talked at length about leadership lessons learned from the Marine Corps, such as why being a disciplined leader is so important and why great leaders lead from the front. This was a discussion I couldn't wait to bring you because Mark has his priorities in line. His faith, his family, his work, and he knows how leadership is important in all of those things. So get out your pad or open Evernote because you'll need it for this episode. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with Mark Hood. Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft, a company focused on developing leaders that add value to their organization and the world. Check out their brand new online leadership programs, blogs, and podcasts at learnloft.com. The brand new 10-day leader challenge program helps you become a better leader in less than 5 minutes a day, or you can run a challenge within your organization by visiting learnloft.com/leader challenge. Well, Mark, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
It's very exciting for me to have you here to share your story with our audience, because I think it's such a powerful one. Not only your military background in the Marines, your professional success as a VP of sales and a development professional, certainly the fact that you were on a plane that went down in the Hudson and Sully, the movie, is out right now. So you have this really interesting story from early to late. For people that don't know Mark Hood, in a sentence, Give me who you are, where you're from, and what you stand for.
Yeah, so, John, I was born in Greenville, South Carolina, and I am a professional student of leadership. No matter where you are in life, if you choose to be a leader, then it shows and shines through in everything you do. Everything from my military career into the business leadership world, but even beyond that, when you're in a business position, whether you're a leader or not, one of the first or key drivers of a leader is that they know how to follow. So you can implement policy that's given to you. And then beyond that, after I moved into sales leadership, then out of that into consulting, you have to be driven and you have to lead your clients because your clients, as you know, oftentimes want you to help them find a decision.
So you went from Greenville, South Carolina, to the military, to professional world coming out of the military.
Yeah.
And then you've continued that journey now, and you're how old now?
Yeah, so I'm 56 now, John.
56, yeah. Two kids,
grown. One's an Army officer, and one's an actress. I graduated from the Citadel, undergraduate, and then did my graduate work at Clemson as a strength coach.
Okay.
Go Tigers. And so I spent about a decade in strength and conditioning prior to going into the Marine Corps.
Gotcha. And then Your journey into the Marines was an interesting one. What did you learn from those 11 years as it relates to leadership? Anything come to mind?
Absolutely. There's a couple of things. One, you know, the cliches, there's nowhere to hide, is key. I was an infantry officer, so I was in charge of anywhere from 36 men to 60 men, depending on the individual unit. And you're taught leadership principles in the Marine Corps. And when you're learning them, they all sound very interesting, but when you apply them, they make the difference between success and failure. I'll give you an example. One of them is know yourself and seek self-improvement. You know, how often do we as leaders look at ourselves to improve rather than looking outside? That's a key number one component. The next one is to be technically and tactically proficient. You know, in other words, if I have a job to do, I'm going to do that job to the best. I'm going to do whatever it takes to improve myself to be good at that job. The next one is know your people. That's key. Know who's strong and who's weak within your organization, and then exploit those who are strong and minimize the weaknesses so people don't fail. Set them up to be successful. And keep your people informed. I always learned this in the Marine Corps. If you can pass that information down to them as soon as you get it and as soon as you've verified it, then they'll be ready to go when it's time to do something. Now, John, I was very lucky in the Marine Corps in that I trained for real-world operations and then actually got to execute them. Again, long ago when a guy named...
Hey, hold on. Before you explain that to me a little bit. So long ago
when a guy named Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait...
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. So I was on a ship off the coast of Liberia, and I was with what's called a Marine Expeditionary Unit, Special Operations Capable Group. And so we flew into the embassy in Liberia in the middle of a civil war and brought order back to a country. And I share that with you because some people train all their lives and never get to actually execute a real-world operation, but that was boots on the ground. Tremendous learning experience. One of the key takeaways from that is set the example, because every day we would take off in helicopters for at least 3 weeks and do mock invasions of the country or mock penetrations. Mm-hmm. Well, the longer you fly in those helicopters up there, the more the fuel gets to you, the smell gets to you, and people start to get ill. But you have to push on and ensure you accomplish the mission. You do that by setting the example.
How do you, I've always wanted to ask this question to a military person. We're talking life or death situations in some, when you get into the operations. Mm-hmm. How important is it, or the chain of command? You might get a mission from somebody, and you know you're going into a dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. How easy or hard is it to follow that command as a follower to someone that's passed down this order? And what goes through your mind?
Great question. First off, great question. And you have hit on the crux of what makes the Marine Corps successful, and you've hit on the crux of what makes leaders successful, and that is mission. Mission comes before everything else. So, in other words, you know, give you an example, the Marine Corps is pretty small. So when we're given a mission, we've got to succeed. So if my mission is to take the embassy or take a wing of the embassy that's under attack, then I'll do whatever it takes to achieve that mission. And I've ensured that my Marines knew everything they had to do to ensure the mission was achieved, because that's the first and foremost number one concern of anything. It's not what's going to happen to Mark Hood, what's going to happen to the person behind me. It's achieve that mission.
That's... And then that rolls up to the purpose of keeping the country safe, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And the people within it. So,
absolutely.
So having that sense of mission and communicating that mission so that everyone on that team, no matter how scared they are, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm sure you had situations when you were like, this is scary, right? Or did that go through your mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'll jump forward. You know, I mentioned Saddam when I was in Liberia. Well, I came home from Liberia and then went right to Desert Storm. And normally, when you're engaged with an enemy combative like that, and again, it was a very short conflict, mm-hmm. But you're so busy trying to achieve the mission and to achieve the goals that you really don't have a lot of time to be afraid. You know, and fear is something that's very interesting, because if you let fear in and you let fear have a foothold, and this goes not in the military, but in life, period. You know, when we're faced with stress every day or you think about what's going to happen in the future, there's really not a thing that you can do from worry and fear that changes the outcome. But if you'll focus on a plan and a well-thought-out step-by-step process, you can conquer that fear. And I think that manifests itself probably in a much easier environment than any place else you'll see it other than sports in the world of conflict and combat.
The word that comes to mind to me, Mark, is courage, right? I think when I think of the military and I think of probably your feeling going into what could be a fearful situation, and really I think any leader, I think the one thing that separates all effective leaders is having the courage to stand up, you know, in the face of XYZ. And in the professional world, it might be people telling you you're doing it wrong, or the pressures from society, or the pressures from the markets, or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. In the military, it might be standing up in the face of danger or death. Mm-hmm. But that word courage really stands out to me when I think about our military, and certainly the service that you gave our country.
Well, John, that's a key word, and I look at it in basically two contexts. The first one is moral courage. Do you have the moral integrity to do what's right when you know it's a lot easier to do the thing, or you know that it'll be easier to not necessarily do the right thing, to do the wrong thing? But persevering in doing the right thing is a habit that you form. And again, in the military, you can do it over and over and over by persevering. But that bleeds over into the rest of your life. And I'll give you an example. I worked for a company out of Japan. And the company in Japan was always wanting to blame every failure in the market on the sales representatives. And I was the vice president of sales. And so success in their eyes was for me to purge the sales force by X number every year. Well, I stopped that the first year I took over. And as long as you stand up and are accountable for your decision and let them know it's my decision, but I'm not going to purge the sales force every year, then they'll normally respect you and leave you alone for that and let you execute your plan.
It's interesting. I think I've talked before about profit over people, you know, and this idea of many organizations so focused on the numbers, so focused on making the revenue targets that they forget about the people that drive that revenue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's cliche to hear a CEO say, I care about my people. But when it comes time to make the decisions of making cuts or, you know, pulling for everyone to take a pay cut to make this work without having to cut 200 or 500 or 1,000, not many leaders make that concession. Right.
Right.
And your example of the pressure you were getting from Japan and standing up to say, maybe these people aren't performing at this high a level right now, but I can get them there, or I'll find a place where they can add more value. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept. And I think we're on that path to the current leadership or modern leader to understand the importance of people over profit. But every situation is not exactly like that.
No, I agree. And oftentimes as leaders, we have a responsibility to the teams that report to us. I'll give you another. This is another transparent example. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes in the military, when it starts to rain and it's cold, you'll find officers who will find places where it's dry to stay, or they'll be in a vehicle. Well, in the units that I served with, I had some incredible superior officers who would not allow that. So whenever it was dirty, whenever it was rainy, when it was cold and wet, we were right there in the field with the Marines we commanded. So we were just as dirty every day. Well, think about that. Think about the respect you garner from the people you lead when you're in the trenches with them, swinging and fighting and suffering just like they are. They can look over at you, and in you see, this guy cares about me. This is a true leader, and he's different.
He's not sleeping in the car where it's dry and warm.
Right.
He's sleeping right next to me where it's wet and cold.
Right.
It's a fantastic story.
Right. And the examples of that are rampant in business as well.
Well, you've talked about a lot of just great leadership principles from the military to then your transition into the professional world. You spend some time in your current day work. You've done a couple talks around leading from the front. Mm-hmm. And what is leading from the front in your mind, or when you go deliver these things to clients to help them, their first line managers, perform better?
Yeah, so that's, again, another great question, because leading from the front in the world that I live in means I don't send anybody to do anything I can't do. So in other words, if I'm a sales manager, I'm going to be able to lead by example and sell myself. Now, hopefully, John, I'm not the best seller. Hopefully, one of my salespeople is better than I am. But I'm at least going to mimic the right behavior day in and day out. Because, again, people can see that over and over and over. Oftentimes, we as sales leaders, and I use the word sales leader because nobody gets excited about the word sales manager. But sometimes a sales leader needs to do nothing more then put their hand on the shoulder or their hand on the arm of their seller and let them know they're doing right. You know, it's an awfully heady feeling when you are a sales manager and you go in to save an account, because it's such a good feeling when you do that and you feel so strong and good about doing that. But think of the difference that you can make if you can get that salesperson to do that and you take a bit of a back seat to them by prepping them before you go in there. And then they know, top to bottom, you've got their back.
I've heard, I saw this week, and I just loved it. It's the five most powerful words someone can say to someone that they lead. I am proud of you. I mean, just as something as simple as I am proud of you. You think of your parents saying it to you as a kid, or you saying it to your children, or you saying it to an employee. I mean, what an encouraging thing for someone to hear, right? I am proud of you.
That's right.
It sounds like you did that, and you do that continually to say, I'm going to lead from the front. I'm going to be right there with you. I'm not going to do your job for you, right? Because at the end of the day, I very much believe that it's a leader's it's the people's job to produce the results.
Correct.
It's the leader's job to produce the people,
right?
And I think that concept of you developing those people to produce results from leading from the front is a fantastic one.
Oh yeah.
What's the one of my favorite questions to ask? What's the best investment that you've ever made?
In a business sense?
It can be anything, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be money. It doesn't have to be a purchase. Maybe it is. I'll give you an example. You know, some people say the investment of the time they spent with their kids, right? Other people might say, you know, it was the first basketball I ever bought, right? Because I went on to be a professional athlete. But what's the best investment you've ever made?
The education that I was able to offer to my children. My son, who, again, I said earlier, is an Army officer at this time.
I wonder who you learned that from.
Yeah, that's right. But I was able to allow them to go to a place that enhanced a specific set of skills they already had. My children had basic language skills in two foreign languages from going to a public school in Minnesota. And when we got here, the options were very limited. So we were able to enroll them in a private school. And again, not everybody has access to that, but I was blessed with being able to do that. And the results were significant for how my children turned out.
That's a great example. I think since we're on the topic of children, it's a question I ask often as well, which is what's harder, being a leader at home or being a leader at work?
No doubt, being a leader at home.
Well, why do you say it so clearly?
Because the emotions run so much higher, and there's never any escape. You know, at the end of the day, when you leave work, you go home, and, you know, I have a very, very gifted and supportive wife, and she always held the household as a place of rest and regrouping when I came off the road. But it is 24/7, as you know, and everyone looks to you for the answer. And there's never any downtime.
I'm going to ask you a tough question.
Fire away.
And I've wanted to do it for a while. You've, in many ways, been at very high levels of leadership throughout your career. From the military to VPs of sales, multiple places, and you make a decision a few years back to move out of a leadership role where you're managing other people to be an individual producer. Why that decision, and did leadership have a part in that?
Leadership is what it's all about that move. I don't think you have to wear a title a VP of sales to be a leader. I've been exposed and had great opportunities here at SPI to lead.
For those of you who aren't aware, Sales Performance International.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
To lead clients into making decisions that impact and affect not just 10 to 20 people, but as you know, John, we deal with thousands in some sales forces. So your impact as a leader, in whether you're dealing with a peer or a client, is magnified times 10. And so that's a great question, because some people say, I lead because I've gotten here and I never want to stop. I never want to step down from the title. But the truth is, you could strip us all down of titles and put us in a room and you'd be able to tell who the leader was immediately.
How?
By the way they act, by the way they hold themselves, the articulation, the confidence, whether they set the example, whether they step up. You know, and again, I'll go back to, it's always a conscious decision to be a leader. You choose to either lead or follow. And some people can turn it off, but good leaders never, ever turn it off.
That's interesting. I've never thought of it like that. I get asked this question a lot about people. How do I move faster in my organization? Because I really want to make an impact on other people. What advice would you give to a young professional that has the desire to lead, or mm-hmm. makes that choice that I want to be a leader? Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to a modern professional that asks you that question?
Well, the first thing I'd say is make sure you're grounded in what qualities leaders display. And if someone says, well, I don't know, well, you simply have to look around. You see the really good leaders. You know, again, I'll pull back. In the military, I had a fantastic company commander when I was a brand new lieutenant that took us into Liberia. He was fearless.
What was his name? Do you remember?
His name's Gary Oles, and he was a genius, okay? And then I experienced other officers who weren't that good and weren't that strong. So the beauty of that was it allowed me to weigh the strengths of a strong leader with someone who had qualities that showed them to be a poor leader. So my advice back to someone who wants to move forward is find those qualities in a good leader and then begin to internalize those. And then more than anything, succeed in the current opportunity you have, because nothing breeds promotion and advancement like success.
Which is also what I think one of the biggest problems with leadership is, right? We promote people that are really good at their job. They're promoted because they're good at their job. Mm-hmm. But they've never received any formalized training about how to then go manage or lead other people. They got promoted because they were good at what the people that they're going to be managing are going to be doing.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's actually one of the causes for our corporate leadership problem. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I haven't figured out a better way to do it yet. So mm-hmm. I hate to bring up a problem without a solution. It's one of the things I tell my team. But I do think there's a real issue there, because we're just promoting top performers.
Well, I do. But I also think that as senior leaders and executives, we have to groom people. Because, you know, the question of how do I advance myself? Mm-hmm. Well, one of the steps is you let executives know that you want to move up, that you want to be developed. Because that's a different career track mm-hmm. than someone who just wants to succeed over and over in their current job. Now, granted, you've got to have a bit of both. You can't finish last and plan to you know, be a leader in the company.
Right.
But as the thing I always did as a sales leader was I always had a bench of potential leaders, and then I was parsing out activities over and above what they did on a daily basis to see if they could fulfill those activities. And then I always had that bench ready to go when I had an opening.
I like that strategy, right? How much did you, when you were a VP of sales, how much did you think about your bench, your leadership bench?
That's a great question. I thought about it every day, because in that world that I was in, there was so much, you know, recruiters would come in and snatch your best people, dangle money in front of them and pull them out. So you got to have a backup plan of people to develop. You know, this goes back to the military again as well. You should always be able to understand and perform someone's job at least one to two levels above you, because you never know when you're going to have to perform that job. Now, again, in the military world, it's when, you know, a senior leader is killed and you have to move up without wearing that particular rank, but you've got to exercise those responsibilities. And in a similar thing, in the civilian world or in the corporate world, when you're given an opportunity to make a decision, you have to ask, what would my boss think? What would my supervisor think? What would they tell me to do if they weren't here? And man, if you can get in sync with that, then what happens is you become invaluable, because then I can lean on you. You know, I had region managers who I could be gone on vacation, and I knew they wouldn't call me because they'd make the decisions that they needed to make, and there were decisions I would make without having to question them. Others, I'd have to take their calls.
Yeah, I really love the idea of really great leaders know what's happening when they're not there,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't have to worry because they know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an easy thing to get to, by the way. I mean, I think so much. We talk about it all the time, leadership being a journey and not a destination. And I believe that with all my heart, right?
Me too.
But some of the things you've said today are just, it's got me thinking, Mark, right? About me, myself personally.
Yeah.
I got to do a better job.
Well, you know, you and I had a discussion once, are leaders born or are leaders developed?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really, like you said, it's a journey, because you could have that spark of leadership, that curiosity in you, but it never is developed and you'll never be that leader. But you could be someone without as much talent as a leader, but someone takes an interest in you, informs you, and helps you develop the skills. Boom, off you'll go as a leader.
Yeah, I concur. The if you could have dinner, to switch gears a little bit, if you could have dinner with any three leaders, in living or dead, okay. People that you just, and it could be someone back from your military history that might you haven't seen in a long time. Who would those three leaders be?
Well, the first one would be Winston Churchill. Because, again, having read volumes on Winston Churchill's leadership skills, he fascinates me. The things he did, the things he got away with. Things he got away with on a regular basis. The other one is, I would find it fascinating to have dinner with a guy like Abraham Lincoln, who, talk about a leader, when the whole country was falling apart and the easiest decision would have been break up the Republic, he kept it together, you know, top to bottom, and paid for it basically with his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, other person that I'd have dinner with would be Chesty Puller, who probably a lot of people don't know who Chesty Puller is.
I don't either, so yeah, I'd like to learn.
He was a Virginian who was one of the highest decorated Marines of World War II in Korea. And just having read his memoirs and the way he approached leadership, I think form and have an impact on every modern Marine Corps leader and every modern business leader who spent time in the Marine Corps than they'll ever know, because he lived it every day, every day. There was no soft mattress for him when it came time to sleep on the deck. You know, he was right there with his people suffering.
Well, those are three fantastic examples. You've given me some reading material, right, with the last one. But I think the overarching idea here of the discipline that's required, and the hope, really, that anybody can go be an effective leader with the right head on their shoulders, the right approach, the right mission, the right strategy, you know, all core principles that you learned from your military days.
But you hit it dead on with that one word, the discipline of being a leader, because you don't turn it off. You know, we used to take our sales representatives on award trips. And the easiest thing to do then when you get down there is just to completely relax. But you can't really even do that as a leader, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. And the last thing you want to do is not be prepared to be able to address a certain situation. Again, preparation in life, as you know, is key, as we talked about before with Flight 1549.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Okay.
So you were on the plane.
I was on flight 1549 in January 2009, and I was coming home from a business trip to New Jersey and was seated in a window seat in first class. For those of the listening audience that don't know, Flight 1549 was the one that took off with Captain Sullenberger. He was actually the pilot. Jeff Skiles was flying and hit a flock of geese and then did a forced crash landing into the Hudson River. So this is a prime example, and sometimes, John, I think that my entire leadership life and world came together to prepare me for that plane crash. And it was a near thing. And the movie that's out now does an incredible job to demonstrate it. But when that plane hit the geese, Captain Sullenberger never panicked. He only said, "Brace for impact." That's the only thing he said. But I was up front, so I could hear the computers in the cockpit saying, "Pull up, pull up, pull up." And I could see the engine on fire. And then I could see basically the bridge between New Jersey and New York come into our view dead ahead. And we cleared it with like 600 feet, barely. So I knew we were going to crash then. So there's not really a whole lot you can do. And again, being a man of faith.
Mm-hmm. You went right to prayer.
Well, I went right to prayer.
Yeah.
And I held a hand on my seatmate and prayed.
Had you talked to them yet?
Talked to my seatmate.
Your seatmate?
Briefly. We were complete opposites on everything. Sports, politics, everything. You know. But she's a good dear friend now. But, you know, the other thing that I did is part of the prayer not only was for protection for my family and the people on the plane, but, you know, if we crash and we don't all die, then let me be an honorable man and let me bring honor to my family, to my God, to the Marine Corps and to the Citadel. Because to me, it seems to be it's much worse to behave dishonorably than to die. So we came in and crashed, bounced once and came to rest. Water's flooding in the back of a plane. The plane is beginning to sink from the rear first. As soon as we come to rest, people are running up the aisles past us and going out the front two doors. So my seatmate had been in the tuck position. I had not. I was looking out the window trying to assess if there were any additional dangers. So I woke her up or pulled her out of her tuck position, grabbed her, and we walked up or moved expeditiously up. And the rescue rafts had deployed out of the front two doors. So when I looked out, John, again, and having come from the Marine Corps, I was trained that in any type of disaster situation or combat situation, you can still lose people after the initial shock of the combat if you don't pay attention. So I looked out there, and there were people in the water. Now, the air temperature that day was, I think, 19 degrees.
Water was freezing.
You know, above the bridge, there were ice chunks in the water. So I helped my seatmate into the rescue raft. And then, again, most people were in shock. Again, I bring a different background with me. So I had a plan. And, again, part of having that plan meant that I could keep myself whole and from going into either hypothermic shock because it was so cold. Because remember, in that raft, it had water in it itself, and there was water flooding into the raft, so it wasn't like it was dry. First thing I did in the raft is I looked over, and a young lady swam to the side of the raft and said, "Is there room?" Well, I pulled her right in.
No, you got to stay in the water.
Yeah, jerked her right in and then helped other people get in to the raft. So again, you know, without really digging into the details of it, it's a decision you make that never leaves you that I'm going to lead. I don't care if everybody in the whole world panics on that plane. I'm going to lead where I think the solution is. So the first thing was getting people into the raft because most people were frozen with cold and shock. So we're able to get quite a few people into the raft.
What amazes me is that you're thinking about other people, right? I mean, you're thinking about yourself, but your thoughts immediately go to those around you. And I think that's, if there's not a better tenet to leadership, I don't know what is, right?
Well, you know, but you have to boil it down to that I had done something like that before. I'd swum a river in Virginia in February before, and I'm a little better insulated than some people. So I knew I'd survive. And I knew that I'd be the last one out of the water if it came to that. You know, a guy named Arlen Williams, who graduated from the Citadel in the 70s, was on a flight that crashed into the Potomac. in 1982, I believe it was. And he went into the water. And again, it was in January. The water was freezing. And when the helicopters came to rescue the people, there were six people that went in the water. They lowered the life ring to him, the first. He passed it. He passed it five times. When they came back the sixth time to pull him out of the water, he was dead. That's leadership. And so that's what I was thinking of that day. If I could do that, if it was called upon, called on me to do, then that would be the ultimate leadership.
How often do you think about that fight?
The flight?
Or just that day, that...
It ebbs and flows. It leaves me with a quiet confidence every day that no matter what this world throws at me,
you're going to get through it.
And it's never going to be as bad as that day.
Yeah. Well, and it's got a happy ending in a way. You know, I mean, a lot of there are not many plane crashes that have happy endings.
You're right.
Right? And so I think that one makes it such a unique, not only do you fly over buildings and you land, right there in New York City, in the river, but it's got a happy ending and it's got a hero, right? Only from the pilot, but from the people on board like you, right? It's a wonderful story, and I hope people go see the movie just to see, what it was like. You did a video with Marriott Hotels, which I thought was fantastic. We'll make sure to put a link in the show notes. Okay. But it's just it's one of these things, Mark, that just it makes me think of. I saw a leadership expert, Tim Knight. It's called E plus R equals O, event plus response equals outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And this event happens that you could never plan for.
Mm-hmm.
And your response and others on that plane depicted the outcome, mm-hmm. right? That nobody died, mm-hmm. and that everybody got on a raft, and everybody, it was the response to the event that ultimately impacted the outcome. And so
absolutely.
It's a fantastic story. I can't thank you enough for sharing it. And then, the lessons that come with it.
Very good. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you doing this. It means the world to me and the audience. So we'll make sure to link to all the appropriate places in the show notes. And thank you again for your service.
Very good. Thank you, my friend.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It's a real honor and pleasure to bring you stories and best practices to help you perform better at work and at home. You can continue to educate yourself at learnloft.com. There's free resource section, as well as old podcast episodes, blogs, and even a free trial of our Getting Leadership Ready program, as well as our High Performance Leadership program to help you perform better at work. Until next time, remember, you don't need permission to lead.